Hello and welcome back to the Team Called Palace podcast. I'm Ben Watts, he's Matt Watts. And on last week's edition, we both very much predicted that Crystal Palace Football Club would not be winning at Anfield and how wrong we were. A 1-0 victory against Jurgen Klopp's side. Matt, just first of all, how good was that?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Obviously, the goal was exceptional, but just the overall performance, the way that we defended, tackles we won, the interceptions we made, the blocks, the saves from Dean Henderson, a fantastic win, a really good performance, and it was just so well deserved.
And I put to you on the previous podcast that the results hadn't been forthcoming so far under Oliver Glasner, but you were keen to point out just how promising the performances themselves were. And I think you said, you know, we'll get some points at some point. And, you know, obviously we didn't expect it to be this one, but I guess off the back of that shock defeat that Liverpool had in the Europa League against Atalanta, that was another thing we mentioned, that would there be a little bit of a hangover after that? I think perhaps we were expecting the opposite from them, to really respond to that heavy defeat in Europe. But maybe it did turn out to be a continuation of their recent problems.
Absolutely, yeah. And to be honest with you, I was expecting a response. I think after their performance on Thursday night, everything with the Hillsborough anniversary as well, I was expecting Liverpool to come flying out of the traps, but actually we started really well. They started incredibly slowly. We got the goal, and yes, they did come into the game as it went on. Obviously, for much of the second half, it was one-way traffic, but they weren't at the races, and you know, we managed to make the most of it. For me, the thing that was most pleasing, though, after that game against City last weekend, where we played so well in the first half, our performance levels didn't really drop too much. Yes, we didn't quite hit the same heights in the second half, but we still defended incredibly well. And I think that's one thing that Palace have been guilty of at times this season, not putting two halves of football together. Well, on Sunday, we did that.
And to mark the occasion, we thought we'd do things slightly differently on the podcast this week. After a performance like that, you'd be forgiven for, you know, singling out individuals and saying XYZ player could have been man of the match. Well, we thought we'd focus on all 11, plus maybe the triple sub, because everyone contributed in such a big way, didn't they, Matt? And let's start with Dean Henderson between the sticks, because I guess we're starting to see the value of having a £20 million backup goalkeeper.
Yeah, we are. And I thought this was a breakout Palace performance for Dean Henderson, because he was outstanding. He made a couple of excellent saves. The one in the first half to deny Luis Diaz, he kind of poured it away. And then the one in the second half where Darwin Núñez fired it at him, he got his knee or thigh to it. I mean, to be honest with you, if Núñez had put it anywhere else, it would have gone in. But yeah, a fantastic performance from Dean. We spoke about it on the last pod. He made some really good saves against Man City, and I thought he was really unlucky to concede four goals on that occasion. Well, in this one, he kept the clean sheet. And I thought also those scenes at full time, him celebrating with the fans, it really does kind of feel as though he's arrived now.
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely to see him giving it a bit of the eagles to the club cameras as well for social media content. A surprise pick in Nathaniel Clyne as part of the back three for this one against his former club, of course, but played his part.
Yeah, he did. And I thought on the whole, he did really well. Let's be honest, Clyne, he hasn't played much Premier League football recently. So to come in at Anfield and be on the right-hand side of a defence where you know that Luis Diaz is going to be occupying plenty of your time, I thought he did really well. Obviously, he made an excellent block to deny Jota in the second half. I have to say, I thought the timing of the substitution was good, because as I said, Clyne hasn't played a lot of football and I didn't see him lasting 90 minutes. So that's definitely another tick in the box for Oliver Glasner. But yeah, on the whole, Clyne had a really good game.
Yeah, goal-saving block, wasn't it? Another one that Jota, like Nunez, really had to score, but hit it straight down the middle of the goal. And yeah, the logic seems pretty sound from Glasner, using Clyne, his extra bit of pace perhaps, and then bringing Ward on when maybe they were going to have to go a little bit more direct towards the end, and his experience. The man in the middle of the back three, Joachim Andersen, I mean, what a game he had.
Yeah, he was absolutely exceptional. And this was a return to his early season form. Obviously, he scored the winner at Old Trafford. Yes, Palace have won at Old Trafford and Anfield this season, but I thought having the captain's armband probably helped him because it was a captain's performance. I thought coming up against an old foe in Darwin Núñez probably helped him as well. But yeah, he just headed and kicked absolutely everything. He made 14 clearances, which is absolutely outstanding. And obviously he's playing in a back three with a right back and a centre midfielder, and he just commanded it so well. So yeah, I thought Joachim was absolutely phenomenal.
And about the centre midfielder, I think the description on the Five Live commentary from Neil Lennon was that Jefferson Lerma looked like he'd been playing centre-back all his life. The Colombian also had a very good game.
Yeah, he did. And I think between him and Tariq Mitchell, they did a fantastic job of keeping Mo Salah quiet. Now, I didn't think Mo Salah looked anywhere near his best, but they did an exceptional job against him. I thought Lerma, just with the tackling, the kind of physicality that he brought, really aggressive. You know, he wasn't sitting off people. He was getting stuck into them. He did incredibly well. I would still rather see him in midfield, but it's so useful having someone like him who can do these two jobs incredibly well.
And that's for Tyrone Mitchell, like you say, keeping Mo Salah quiet. And England, of course, have got concerns about injuries for guys at left back. And maybe this performance will have, you know, just made Gareth Southgate crane his neck up and have a little watch of the highlights.
Yeah, this was Tariq Mitchell back to his best as well, because he was absolutely outstanding, both defensively and going forwards. Of course, he gets the assist for Abiri Eze's goal. It was a phenomenal performance. And once again, like I said about Jefferson Lerma, he was just so aggressive in the tackle. He didn't give Salah any time and space. And also, he was a really important outlet. Both him and Daniel Munoz, really important outlets for us. So yeah, a fantastic performance from Tariq. More performances like this, and who knows, he may just sneak onto the plane.
Speaking of future England internationals, Adam Wharton, maybe apart from moments on his debut, has taken to the Premier League like duck to water, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And that transfer fee that we paid for him is already looking like an absolute snip, because, you know, you're talking about a hectic game at Anfield against some top quality midfielders. But for me, he was the best centre midfielder on the pitch. He just oozes class. In possession, he was just so composed. You know, so much is going on around him, but he still looks so calm. He still plays these nice little passes to his teammates. He doesn't give the ball away. He had an 88% pass completion, which just kind of speaks to that. But then also out of possession, he was fantastic. He was so disciplined. He puts his foot in. He makes interceptions. I thought both him and Will Hughes did a really good job at blocking those passing lanes. So, yeah, I mean, what a player. And all I can really say is thank you, Blackburn Rovers.
Yeah, they knew, their fans, how good he was, that's for sure. Our other left-footed central midfielder, you mentioned him there, Will Hughes. A few weeks back on the pod, we were questioning his role within the team and whether he's got enough quality, to be honest, to be a Premier League footballer going forward. He's out of contract in the summer, of course. And actually, in recent weeks, he's quietly done a pretty decent job, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And once again, I thought his tenacity was excellent. As with Wharton, his kind of game awareness, blocking those passing lanes, making it really hard for Liverpool. I thought it was quite telling how often they had to go sideways and backwards, because we were just doing such a good job stopping them from getting the ball to the likes of Diaz, Núñez and Salah. I must admit, I thought at times Hughes was a little bit wasteful in possession. There were times where I wanted him to almost calm things down a bit and just play short, simple passes, help us to keep the ball a bit. But yeah, listen, another fantastic performance. I think also it is important to mention the fact that there have been times where we have questioned whether or not he's up to it. But for him to go and play like that against Liverpool at Anfield, against the World Cup winner and Alexis McAllister, against the likes of Dominic Szoboszlai, a really impressive performance.
To our other Colombian international, and I saw a tweet from somebody suggesting that Munoz has helped transform the way we play, which I guess would be something to do with the energy that he brings on that side of the pitch. And it's obviously something we haven't had from the right back area for a while, but he's just such a full throttle footballer, isn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah. And to be honest with you, technically he's not the best, but as you say, he is full throttle. He runs all day. Again, he's very aggressive. That's definitely something that I think we're going to see more of as Oliver Glasner continues to put his stamp on this team. But yeah, listen, I would agree with that tweet, to be honest with you. I do think he has changed the way that we play, because let's be honest, when we had Joel Ward and Nat Klein playing at right back, quite simply, they just weren't dynamic enough. So he has definitely given us something that we didn't have before. I must admit, I didn't think today was maybe his best game, but that's probably because other people rose their levels. He's been so consistent since he came in. Another fantastic signing by Dougie Freedman.
Ooh, yeah, very good point. Those two January additions, although we wanted more of them, the two that we did get have been exceptional quality thus far. Michael Olise started this one. I was quite surprised at that, to be honest. I thought we were going to see another cameo from him off the bench, but maybe Oliver Glasner just couldn't resist the temptation to get him and Eze on the pitch together for the first time. And funnily enough, we went on and won the game. But what did you make of his efforts?
Yeah, listen, having the two of them back on the pitch together does make such a difference. Just the way they link up with each other. I think Eze looks so much more assured having Olise back on the pitch with him. Obviously, there was a little bit of rust there. There were times where I thought that if Michael Olise had a few more 90 minutes under his belt, maybe the final pass would have been a little bit better. But having him back makes such a difference. Again, a bit like Wharton, he's just so composed in possession. He helps you to keep the ball, which is really important when you go to somewhere like Anfield. Yes, we defended incredibly well, but there are times where you do need to get your foot on it. You know, you can't just soak up pressure for 100 minutes. You need to get your foot on it. You need to try and keep the ball. You need to try and get up the pitch. Ultimately, Michael Olise helps us do that. And also, I was really pleased that Oliver Glasner took him off when he did. There would have been a temptation to leave him on because we're 1-0 up away against Liverpool. Michael Olise is a fantastic player. He could possibly go and make the difference in the remaining 20, 30 minutes. But yeah, I thought it was a really good call to take him off, protect him, bring on the fresh legs, and fingers crossed, he is fit for the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's undeniable what a different team we are when he and Abiré Eze are on the pitch together. Like you say, perhaps if Olise was at total match sharpness, we might have been even more than one goal up at the break, but it was Abiré Eze's goal that gave us that lead, of course. And yeah, remember in recent weeks when people have been criticising his form and saying, oh, maybe we should just cash in on him in the summer, and oh, is he good enough to play for City or Spurs or whoever? Yeah, he is. And he showed that, didn't he, in this one?
Yeah, he did. And fair play to him, because I thought he was poor against Man City. I thought it was probably one of his worst performances in a Palace shirt. So for him to come back from that game and play like he did in this one is testament to him, because in that first half, I thought he was exceptional. I thought it was probably one of the best individual performances I've seen from a Palace player this season. He kept on getting into that kind of pocket of space between their right back, Conor Bradley, and their right centre half, Ibrahima Konate. And he was causing them all kinds of problems. You know, the little passes around the corner, to the likes of Wharton and Mitchell on the overlap, the way he was linking up with Mateta and Olise, he was absolutely outstanding. And we do need to talk about that goal as well, because it was a fantastic goal. Yes, you can talk about Liverpool's defending. It was far too easy for us to carve them apart. But the likes of Wharton, Olise, Mitchell linking up, and then Eze, so cool with the finish. Some people would say, oh yeah, it's an easy finish, but there were quite a few really good chances in that game. And ultimately, he was the only one who took his. So yeah, fair play to him. This was Abiré Eze back to his very best.
Yeah, fair point about his composure for the goal. And I think at one point, there was a little passage of play where he nutmegged three players pretty much in a row, which was just obscene. And like you say, fantastic from him. JP Mateta up front arguably could have joined him on the score sheet, maybe should have done, but actually he's continuing to carry a threat in the way that perhaps he hasn't done in the past. And I guess you've got to credit a couple of Liverpool players for stopping him getting on the score sheet.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, that first chance was a massive one. I must admit, I thought that was going to prove to be the turning point in the game. It was an excellent goal line clearance from Andy Robertson. Obviously, JP Mateta is bearing down on goal. We've spoken about the fact that time isn't always his best friend. But for me, he beats the goalkeeper. He gets the shot on target. And if he just got a bit more power on it, or if Andy Robertson wasn't quite so quick, ultimately, he puts us 2-0 up. So I'm not going to be too hard on him on that one. And then, of course, the one in the second half as well. That was a phenomenal save from Alisson. From such close range, for him to get a hand on that and keep it out. Yeah, JP might look back on it and think, do you know what, I should have scored. I should have added to my recent goal tally, but he is contributing so much at the minute. And I don't know about you, but the whole shirt tucked in look, it kind of makes me feel like he's the missing member of the USA dream team, like the basketball team with Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley and all of that lot. I could just see JP Mateta just hanging around with them because, yeah, it's a real kind of throwback look, but fair play, it's working for him.
Yeah, I could see him in a basketball vest shooting hoops, actually. He's kind of got the swag for it, doesn't he? And ultimately, he's a team man as well and seemed delighted about the win. Fantastique. Well, we're on to the substitutes, Matt, and the triple change, which I think if Roy Hodgson had made this, he'd have been absolutely slated by the fan base. And yet, Jairo Riedewald, Joel Ward and Jeffrey Schlupp appeared in 2024 as a triple substitution off the bench and did their jobs at Anfield against Liverpool. Fair play to the lads, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, I think the Ward for Klein one was a good sub because they were going to go more direct. Ward gave us more aerial prowess from set pieces. I thought the Jairo decision was an interesting one because he could have gone for Ahamada, he could have gone for Ozo, but he went for Jairo, who of course hasn't really been available for most of Oliver Glasner's time at the club so far. Ultimately, Jairo is an experienced player. Technically, he's a very good player. So I think maybe having that extra bit of composure probably did help. And then, of course, Jeffrey Schlupp coming on for Bir Eze. I must admit, I thought it was a good call because ultimately we were 1-0 up. And if we were going to have any kind of chances, it was going to be on the counter-attack. Bir Eze isn't the quickest. He was starting to look a bit leggy because he had put in a real shift. So again, I thought it was a really good call. So yeah, listen, making those three changes, yes, obviously on paper, it may not look the most exciting, but when you are 1-0 up, I do think it is important to freshen up the team because ultimately Liverpool are making lots of changes. They've got loads of depth on their bench. They're bringing on quality players. So it was important for us to do that. And you'd have to say it worked.
Yeah, and like you say, those three guys do have plenty of experience at this level. Riedewald's a defensive-minded player. Obviously, IU also came on for Elise, which we mentioned, Edouard coming on late on as well. And actually, I think that point that you make about Glasner's willingness to make substitutions is obviously in quite stark contrast to Roy Hodgson, who was quite shy when it came to making subs and, you know, each to their own on that. Pep Guardiola doesn't really make changes, does he? But I think in modern football, the way that the game is going with the five subs now, you almost need starters and finishers, don't you? It's not just a case of leaving your best players on the pitch. Sometimes it really is about energy, and particularly the fact that we were trying to hold on to a lead anyway kind of lended itself to those guys that we did bring on.
Yeah, it did. And you mentioned Pep Guardiola and Manchester City. Manchester City dominate the ball. They dictate the tempo. A lot of their players are kind of swanning around, playing passes. It's very different when you're Crystal Palace at Anfield, 1-0 up, backs against the wall. That is when you do need fresh legs. So, yeah, I think it's really important. And I think also, I really get the impression that Oliver Glasner believes in the squad. He doesn't just have 13, 14 players that he relies on. He's relying on all of them, and they're all buying into it. And I think you saw that today. You know, you don't get results like that if everyone isn't buying into it.
And speaking of, as someone put it, the Bond villain himself, which I think is fantastic, Oliver Glasner deserves obviously massive praise. And we mentioned it at the top of the pod about how he has evolved the team thus far. And it feels like this performance was the cumulative result of all the work that he's put into this group of players so far.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a statement victory. It's the kind of victory that just gives him more time. We've seen the work that he's doing. We've seen the progress that's being made. And a lot of other Palace fans have as well, to be fair. But there have been some that have said, if Roy had picked up a couple of points against the likes of Luton, Forest and Bournemouth, you would be critical. And yeah, they do have a point, but we can see the fact that it's a process. Obviously, at some point, that process does need to bear fruit. And this sort of result makes a massive difference. You know, this is something that Palace fans are going to remember for a long time. And it does just kind of get even more buy-in for him whether that's from the players or from the fans. The fact that we've gone up to Anfield and we've won 1-0, and it wasn't just all backs against the wall, we created quite a few good chances. We had the highest XG at Anfield of any other Premier League team this season. So, you know, it was a fantastic result, and it is the sort of thing that Oliver Glasner can build upon in the weeks ahead.
And regarding the weeks ahead, I guess it's slightly pressure off now. Does this win almost secure our safety, secure our status as a Premier League team for next season?
I think when you look at it, obviously Luton have played the game more than us. They're 8 points behind us. You would suggest that it's going to be incredibly hard for them to catch us, because if we keep playing like this, we are going to pick up more points. And that's the thing now, you know, I think another win and then possibly a couple of points on top and we are going to be safe. Obviously, we want to use this as a springboard to a really good end to the season to take some momentum into next season. But yeah, I think I must admit, I'm sitting here feeling a lot more comfortable. To be honest with you, I was always pretty confident, but until you get those points on the board, you just never know. So I think we are going to be all right. Obviously, as well, one thing that we haven't mentioned, really important to win away from home. You know, that's our first away win in the Premier League since the 4th of November, which is an incredibly long time ago. And obviously, that was against Burnley. There aren't too many established Premier League teams we've beaten on the road this season. So fantastic to kind of get that monkey off the back. And also fantastic for the away fans who have been travelling the length and breadth of the country. It's a really tough time for people, isn't it? Cost of living crisis, but the Palace fans keep on turning up. They deserve days like this one.
And I guess there's just something special about Crystal Palace winning at Anfield.
Yeah, there really is. This is the third time that Palace have won at Anfield in Jurgen Klopp's era. No other Premier League team has won more than once. So for us to do it three times is remarkable. Obviously, we were the first team to beat him at Anfield, and we could also be the last Premier League team to do that as well. So yeah, there is just something about it. And I must admit, this is the sort of result that I've been crying out for. And this is the kind of thing that I sort of struggled with towards the end of the Roy Hodgson reign, because it no longer felt as though we were disruptors. To me, a good Crystal Palace team should always have a chance of disrupting the likes of Liverpool. So yeah, a fantastic result. And listen, we've had some tough results against them in the past, so it is really nice to go up there and take all 3 points. Obviously, also, 10 years since Istanbul, that anniversary is coming up soon. Dwight Gayle ruining a Liverpool title push. Well, Abir Eze may well have derailed their title bid once again.
Right, kicking off part two of the podcast there, Matt. And it wasn't just the Crystal Palace men's Premier League side that picked up a big win on Sunday, because the women's side in the WSL Championship also picked up a huge 3 points.
Yeah, they did. Laura Kaminsky's side beat Birmingham City 1-0 at Sutton. A massive win for them, because this win takes them to the top of the league. Obviously, not many games to go now. Does look as though it's all going to come down to that game against Sunderland. They've got Lewis away next, and then it's that home game against Sunderland that could well be a title decider. But yeah, it just capped a fantastic day for Crystal Palace Football Club.
Yeah, goal machine Elise Hughes with the winner. That was their game in hand, and they've made the most of it. So 2 points clear at the top of the table with those two games to go. Exciting times for the women's side, potentially going into these final two games of the season, as you say. How about the other teams within the football club, Matt? How have they got on?
So the under-21s drew 2-2 with Chelsea. That was actually a disappointing result, because we were 2-0 up in that one, but Chelsea managed to peg us back. But then the next day, the under-18s beat Southampton 3-0 away from home. There were two goals for Joe Gibbard, who actually played 20 minutes for the 21s the night before, so fair play to him. And there was another goal as well for Benji Casey. That's his 7th goal in his last 5 games. He is in red hot form. Also, I wanted to mention the under-21s, because they've got their Premier League International Cup semi-final against Everton on Tuesday night. That one is at Selhurst Park and fans can attend it. So yeah, a really big game for the 21s, because we want them to get to this final. Ultimately, we want them to play in as many high-profile games as possible. So yeah, good luck to them in that one.
Yeah, absolutely so. And there was another assist, wasn't there, for Rashawn Mathurin in that game. I think there was also another trialist B in the team, which feels like we should have retired it. But there we go. Right, let's briefly end the podcast by previewing our next game against West Ham. London Derby against David Moyes' side, who, of course, can only qualify for the Champions League now by winning in Europe, albeit Bayer Leverkusen have got, of course, now the Bundesliga champions, that advantage over them in their knockout fixture. So, yeah, I guess they've got a pretty big game a few days before this one coming up at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, they do. And the way that tie is poised, they will still fancy their chances. Obviously, Leverkusen scored two fairly late goals on Thursday night to take a 2-0 lead into the second leg. Obviously, they're going to be at home in front of their fans. As you mentioned, Leverkusen just won the Bundesliga. They might be slightly off it. So, yeah, listen, we'll have to wait and see what kind of West Ham team we face. Ultimately, in the Premier League recently, they haven't been great. Obviously, as we were beating Liverpool, they were falling to a 2-0 home defeat against Fulham. So, off the back of that result against Liverpool, I am definitely feeling more confident about this one. I'm almost looking forward to it more than I probably was before. We want to get a positive result. As I said in part one, we want to use that result at Anfield as a springboard, and it'd be really good to back it up with another positive performance and a good result against West Ham.
Yeah, like you say, it'd be lovely to repeat the 4-3 thriller from last season, the victory against the Hammers on home soil. And yeah, as we say, that Leverkusen one is arguably their biggest game of the season, isn't it? This Sunday game, they're only going to be able to turn their attention to that in the aftermath of it. And I know David Moyes has obviously won them a European title last season, but yeah, it still feels like there's elements of the West Ham fan base that are not necessarily happy with the style of play. And, you know, they've obviously reinvested the Declan Rice money, bought the likes of Alvarez in central midfield, Ward-Prowse for this season, maybe still lacking a central striker. It's only really Antonio who's playing that role. And then Bowen, obviously, when he steps in. Lucas Paqueta, I mean, he's clearly a quality player, is being linked with a £85 million move to Man City, even if he is a bit of a serial rotational fouler. Yeah, there's plenty of quality in that side, albeit, I guess, weakness-wise, probably a centre-back, you would look, where they've had a couple of guys that have been in and out of those positions and have made mistakes.
Yeah, and just looking at their team that took on Fulham, I mean, when you've got the likes of Soufal, Mavropanos, Agird, Emerson as your back four, you would like to think that we can get at them. Going forwards, they do have some star quality. You mentioned Lucas Paqueta, also Mohamed Kudus as well, who is an outstanding player. I think they did incredibly well to pick him up. I don't know how long they'll be able to keep hold of him, because for me, he is the kind of player that needs to be playing in the Champions League. Obviously, the threat of James Ward-Prowse is always there. You know, he loves playing against Palace. He scored some excellent free kicks against us in the past. But yeah, listen, I think obviously we don't know what's going to be the situation with Jarrod Bowen. He is a key player for them, a key source of goals. But Mikel Antonio is a real handful up front. And I know he hasn't always had the best time against Palace, but yeah, he is the sort of player that could definitely cause us a few problems.
I guess it'll be a good test for the work that Oliver Glasner and his coaching team have done in terms of making us better from defensive set pieces, because we know all about their delivery into the box and the aerial threat with the likes of Souček, etc.
Yeah, and we saw it in that crazy game at Selhurst Park last season, didn't we? All three of West Ham's goals came from set pieces. They are incredibly strong from dead ball situations, so it is something that we are going to have to be very wary of. I thought on the whole against Liverpool, we did pretty well. There were a couple that Van Dijk managed to get the first contact, but on the whole, I thought we looked pretty settled. And it's definitely an area where we have improved under Oliver Glasner. So yeah, hopefully we can keep that up, because I must admit, there was one point this season where I was getting thoroughly fed up of conceding goals from set pieces.
With that in mind, would you assume the only change from the win at Anfield will likely be Joel Ward back in for Klein for his extra height?
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we didn't make that change. I mean, Nathaniel Klein didn't do a lot wrong, but for me, as a kind of horses of courses change, it would make sense. Obviously, we expect Chris Richards and Mark Gahey to be out for a little bit longer. I believe he's hoping that Mark Gahey might be back for the Man United game. So you would imagine that Jefferson Lerma will carry on playing at the back. And off the back of that game against Liverpool at Anfield, you can't really argue with the centre midfield of Adam Wharton and Will Hughes.
And hopefully, of course, Elise will be even sharper and able to play more minutes in that one. And hopefully him and Eze, I guess, can light it up as they have done on the rare occasion we've seen them together at SE25 this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not expecting them to just go back to their performances against the likes of Brentford and Sheffield United, but it will be fantastic to see them back on the pitch together again. I must admit, this is something that, as Palace fans, I think we do need to make the most of, because they are exceptionally talented players and we don't know how much more of them we're going to see.
Quick prediction for the game then, Matt?
I'm going to go for a 2-1 Palace victory, another goal for Jean-Philippe Mateta, and Michael Olise announcing his return from injury in front of the Selhurst Park fans.
We'd certainly love a bit of that. Thank you for your thoughts today, Matt. In the meantime, Palace fans, are on Facebook, Team Called Palace, and Twitter, TC Palace Pod. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and or Spotify. Let's finish the podcast at long last then with a bit of Cloud All Over to see it out. Enjoy this one, Palace fans.